The Planter's Place podcast is brought to you by Osmocote, the planter's plant food.
For any gardener, there are definitely pest nightmares. This is Amy Grisak, the pest patrol expert for PlantersPlace.com, and I want to share a few of the doozies over the years that I've had in the garden. Now, for gardening for 40 years, of course, there are lots and lots of stories, but one that stands out was last year. So 2020, we had a pretty vigorous grasshopper crop. We're talking kind of Little House on the Prairie level, and I thought it couldn't get any worse. But boy, was I wrong. 2021, they came back with a vengeance. And this was after I applied the grasshopper bait, the Nosema locustae, which is a protozoan that attacks the digestive system of the grasshopper. So it's usually in a bran bait, and that's why they call it grasshopper bait. So it's in a bran bait, it tastes good, they eat it, gets into their system, totally screws up their digestive tract, and they die. And the good news is other grasshoppers will feed upon them, and they die. So it should be a perpetual cycle, but I just don't think I was able to apply enough last year. It was very difficult to obtain because of supply chain issues, and so I only had one bag, and obviously that did not cut it. So by July and August, what wasn't covered in floating row cover in the Remay was subject and vulnerable to the grasshoppers, and they chewed just about everything. So that was a very, very difficult year. And truthfully, the only way I could protect anything was by covering it. So granted, a few got inside that cover, but for the most part, it at least helped plants, especially my zucchini, which was growing like gangbusters last year, and which I absolutely love. It helped the zucchini survive the season. Now, another one that really stands out was my first introduction to blister beetles. So this was probably 14 years ago or so, and I believe I was pregnant with John, with our second. So when I went outside, and there's all these black elongated insects all over, I think it was charred at the time, and just absolutely stripping every leaf right before my eyes, I was at a loss of what to do. You know, being pregnant, I didn't want to bring out the pesticides. And of course, I'm Googling, trying to figure out what's going on, and realize that they're blister beetles. And of course, if you handle them, they can excrete a substance that causes blisters, hence their name. So I didn't want to handle them. And so thankfully, I got out the shop vac and started vacuuming off the leaves of the chard. And that did the trick. So even though it was like a horror movie at the beginning, it ended up on a very, very good note. Now, the other thing living over here on the east side of Montana that I never had to deal with really until we moved over here were earwigs. So anybody who knows those, you know, they're 3/4 to an inch long, and they have the pincers on their hind, and they look very intimidating. But they don't, I mean, the good thing is they don't pinch, they don't bite, you know, that's not a problem. But they just get everywhere. By the end of the summer, if you're not diligent about eliminating at least some of them throughout the year, they will be in every nook and cranny of basil or chard or spinach or any fruit or vegetable. I became very frustrated with growing corn up here several years ago, because it would grow fine, be nice and healthy. You would peel back the ear and 20 earwigs would spill out like you're watching The Mummy or something, you know, with scarabs running all over the place. So it was just absolutely horrific. I didn't want to resort to using the heavy-duty chemicals that some of my friends use that work really, really well and keeps everything earwig-free, but it was just that trade-off that I wasn't willing to go with. So corn and earwigs are really, really tough up here. I have to say that my youngest is going to, he planted corn this year, and he is going to stay on top of it, he said, with diatomaceous earth. So we will see if that does the trick. Now, some other problems for so many people. Of course, the perennial complaint, I think, with landscape, with gardeners throughout the country are deer in areas. they are definitely a challenge. Now, for the first several years when we lived over here in Great Falls, the deer weren't that bad. They would come in at the end of the season, and if I didn't have things covered then, a lot of times they would munch on the tomatoes or destroy the squash, things like that. But as the seasons grew, you know, as more seasons went by, population of the deer increased, and pretty much it's a free-for-all summer long. So to remedy that for the main vegetable garden, my husband did put up a 7-foot fence. It's a chain link fence. It works really, really well. I've heard of deer going over higher fences, you know, keeping, a lot of people recommend keeping it at least 8 feet tall. But because if a deer is desperate enough, they can really, really go over a lot, which is surprising. Our biggest challenge, at least during that first year or so, was making sure the gate was closed. Because for some reason, the deer have absolutely no problem going through that open gate, but by golly, they can't find their way out. So there was one time when they accidentally left it open, one or more came in, and then there's bent parts in the fence where the deer are trying to bounce their way out, but they can't figure it out until they finally hit the open gate. So barrier, or solid barrier, is definitely the number one way to go when it comes to protecting your plants from deer. Next option is individual cages. So my husband, any tree we plant, he has to cage. He even uses just a 4-foot cage, but puts it so the deer can't reach the leaves as much. And they're not as apt to jump in to like a new tree. So that tree is, you know, kind of filling in that center, and there's not a lot of space between the fence and the tree. Hopefully not enough that the deer can reach, or if they do, they're just plucking off a few of the leaves, but not so much to damage the tree. And they're just not, they typically don't jump over that short fence to get to the trees like that, which is good. Another option for those who are planting trees or non-edible plants, the one product that I have used consistently throughout the years is called Plant Skid, SKYDD. And it comes out of Sweden, I believe, and it's not pleasant. It's not pleasant to work with. I always worked with the powdered form, and you create this slurry and then spray it on the plants. You know, in my case, it was hundreds of trees in prime deer and elk country, and it worked really, really well. So Plant Skid is the one that I use. You definitely have to reapply it several times. If you get a lot of rain, it's going to be hard to keep up with, but it definitely works. And I am trying a couple of new products, including one with stakes that are in the ground with a scented bait on the top and, I believe, AA batteries. So the concept is to surround your garden or whatever you want to protect with these stakes. It brings the deer in, their nose touches that shocks them, and they leave the area. So this will be tested very soon, and I will be sure to report back. Now, I guess the last little memory of pests that have been a challenge to deal with are probably ground squirrels. It's kind of hilarious to think about it because we just had a ground squirrel on our patio that came right up to the sliding glass door as our cat was on the inside. So our cat, Suki, was absolutely losing her mind, and it looked to be a young ground squirrel running around, literally came up to the glass and seemed to almost be waving as the cat is putting her paw on the glass going, please just let me out. But of course I would not. So that was very, very cute, but in the years past, they have not been nearly as cute. When I was president of our local community gardens, we had an enormous problem with ground squirrels. They would come in and absolutely decimate the gardens. As soon as people planted, especially the cabbage and broccoli, any of the brassicas, the ground squirrels absolutely loved. So people would plant, the ground squirrels would eat it, they would plant again, and tensions rose quickly. So the local extension agent poisoned for some seasons. You know, he had an applicator's license. That was something he could do. But none of us were very comfortable with that, especially with children and pets in the area, that we didn't want that around everybody. So we ended up using a guillotine-type trap that everybody kind of took turns to check. Even our 80-year-old vegan got to the point where she was willing to help in that matter. So That tells you how bad the ground squirrels were. But they're tough. If you don't want to go to that draconian measures, you really got to put those barricades up. Ground squirrels can climb to some degree, at least a couple of feet. So you want to make sure that fencing that you're using is below the ground. And also, 3 feet high is a pretty good height above the ground, at least 2-3 feet's better to keep those little buggers from climbing up and over so they can get dinner. So I hope you've enjoyed listening to a few of my pest nightmares. I'm sure a lot of you can commiserate. And if you're looking for any more help on specific pests that you have in your garden, whether it is insect or mammal or bird, just be sure to check us out on plantersplace.com.
To learn more from our gardening experts, join the community at plantersplace.com. And be sure to like Osmocote Plant Food on Facebook. Thanks for tuning in to the Planter's Place podcast.